Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is the Driving Eureka podcast, and this week we're going to be talking about truth. But just a note for listeners that are new, you will find that these podcast episodes are related to Doug Hall's newsletter that you can go to DougHall.com and under the menu hit newsletters. You can sign up for it or read them. And so I wanted to give that for any new listeners that we have. So our theme this week, Doug, is truth. All three segments will cover off truth. And in the first segment, you talk about what happened to telling the whole truth.
Yeah, and Trip, I would be under a rock if I didn't say that part of the influence for this week's theme isn't the news that faces the country today, as we have these debates about did someone tell the truth or not the truth, and are people lying or not lying, and then the justification of, well, that's how it's always done, and all this, and it just hit me that my grandmother Hazel Hall, up in North Fryeburg, Maine, should have said that's a lie. You know, there wouldn't have been any, you know, you were either telling the truth or not. And somehow, with regards to our marketing, with regards to our products, there has become an acceptance that you can take a shortcut and maybe not, if you, just because you didn't, you don't have to actually tell people everything, and that it's okay if they assume something other than what it really is, then it's okay. And it's just got me irritated, because I talk to people inside companies. I talk to people who've got companies, and oftentimes what I hear them talk about is they're disengaged because they don't feel there is integrity to the work they're doing, that the product is being cheapened, that the customer is being hoodwinked. And when we aren't grounded in doing the right things in the right way, it becomes an energy suck. It just sucks the energy out of our life. Where when we are grounded in the real and in the genuine and things that are meaningful, I mean, that's why I always use meaningfully unique. It's meaningful. This is truly different. That gives us a different level of energy. And I think I'm a crotchety old man now. We need to get back to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So I see this play out in quite a few different ways, right? Forget the politics, but in as far as products and services, and you know, historically, there's you could almost say that there's always been a problem to a certain degree. So, for instance, the things I see today are, and I'm not going to pick a particular product, you know, name a brand, but a product that you used to get it and it used to come in the 16 ounce tub and now it's the 14 and a half ounce tub, you know, it's been cut back, and to me the price hadn't changed. and this kind of goes back to maybe the thing we talked about in episode 17 around integrity, you know, of products. It just seems like there's a lot of that type of slashing in order to get to profit. Yeah, I think you said it well in the newsletter, that things like false promises, the things that when you get a product, you're expecting it. I bought one of these visor things with the shade and the, you know, supposed to help me with my nighttime vision. I wasn't that impressed after I purchased it. It didn't really live up to what I had expected it to do.
And interestingly, the internet has both helping and hurting in this case. In the short term, it hurts. I mean, I bought a light box thing from one of the online purveyors. I'm not going to give endorsement by names. And the thing came, and I'd read the description, and it appeared like it was a brand new product, so there were only a few reviews. I got the product, and it just plain didn't work. It didn't work. It just didn't work. So I sent it back, and they were good about it. You know, they took it back. But, you know, you can be live instantly now. Now, the good news is long term, reviews are going to kill that thing, and it's going to go away. But in the short term, you just don't know. And somebody told me that when you're using Airbnb, that never take an Airbnb place unless they have a lot of reviews, because a few reviews could be just their friends. And so you got to get to somebody that has a lot of reviews. That's your test of an Airbnb. If it's a place to go to, is do they have a lot of reviews? And so long term, the internet helps us. But in the short term, yeah, you see something, it looked great, looked like awesome, looked like exactly what I wanted, and it was garbage.
You know, it's interesting. I just read an article yesterday about now, even on reviews, you can purchase 10,000 positive reviews for like $168.
And it's a massive problem. I have a friend who's in hospitality with hotels, and he says it's a massive problem in that literally competitors will come stay at your hotel and write bad reviews, and it's verified because they stayed there.
Mm.
I mean, it's just, you know, so it can be a help, but it can be a hindrance. The thing is that we've just got to have, and I mean, we've got to just, when people are not being honest, we have to call them on it. And we have to call ourselves on it when we're tempted to do something. It's like this morning, just before we recorded this, I was having a meeting with some folks. It's a local distiller who's interested in working with us with Brain Brew on some whiskey. And we were talking about the situation, and I said that, well, our products can win, and I could explain exactly why that was, which we'll talk about proof in a minute, but I could explain why. And as opposed to, trust me, it's better, you know, because when you're doing something different, truly different than other people are doing, then you can get a different outcome. But if you're doing the same old stuff as everybody else, then it's just marketing puffery. And eventually you're going to get caught. It's the reason why I love design that's functional, but most design to me is a facade to take the same old crap and make you think it's better. And in that case there, I think design serves a disservice, because after you get by the pretty new shell, you find it's just as crappy as anybody else. And people will try to use design to cover flaws in the fundamental performance of the service or the product, you know, whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah, there are so many areas that require some type of truth, because to be honest, the consumer isn't going to know. I mean, so they have to take kind of a leap of faith associated with the service that they're getting. You know, when I have my HVAC guy come in, I have no idea. I don't really know whether he's doing the right thing or not. I know a little bit more because now I've worked with a few over the years, but there is a degree of trust that you have to have. There are certain companies now that I won't work with just because I know how they operate, you know, and there's a lot of things that drive that.
So this also has to do with ourselves, telling the whole truth to ourselves. I have been this year, for some reason, you know how January comes up and we get our New Year's resolutions. This year, I made the same resolution I've made for the last probably 30 years, which was to get healthier. And for reason, because I married up with my wife almost 40 years ago, she's got us healthier. I mean, and I'm a lot healthier and losing weight and all that kind of stuff. But part of what it required was being absolutely honest with myself, And the first thing was exercise. The number, how much exercise she was doing. You know, you can go and be on a treadmill and be a warm body there, or you can be on the treadmill and actually sweat. You know, it's a different thing. And what I have found is this Apple Watch with its measurement of active calories, how many calories you're burning. And thanks to the folks at Canyon Ranch, we'd done the body pod thing and figured out what my resting metabolic rate was and how much I had to do in calories. I know every day how much I have to move to hit the goals that I've set. And I don't hit it all the time, but I'm probably hitting it at least 80%, maybe not 90% probably. I could look it up, you know, on the app. But that gives me – makes me confront reality. Have I actually moved? Because what I found when I started to measure it is I thought I was doing it because I'd go over and exercise at the ranch. I live next door. But then I'd sit and work on the computer all day long, get up, have dinner, then sit and read a book or watch TV. And at the end of the day, you know, okay, so a corpse has less calories, active calories, but I'm not far, you know. And then you look at it and you go, hey, Tubbo, how'd you get fat? You didn't – you consumed more than you did because you weren't doing anything. Hmm. And so having that, the truth, that measurement makes me confront the truth and be honest with myself I'm doing. And then on the other side, counting calories, which I'm not as good at. But she's articulate at it, so that helps me. But, you know, if you want to get something done, you set some goals, what you got to do, but you got to be honest with yourself. You can't be, oh, well, if I work a little harder, it'll do it. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And so this truth, it's important in not only externally what we do, but we're honest with ourselves. Who are we? Where are we going? And what are we going to do about it? You know, you don't set up to become a great athlete and just, you know, pray for a miracle. You set some goals. You confront the reality of, okay, this is how fast I am now. This is how fast I have to do if I'm going to be able to qualify for X marathon or whatever race or whatever it is. And you confront the reality. Well, in our life, we've got to be honest with ourselves and in our business. And you know what happens when you're honest, as I just said? When you're honest with yourself, when you're honest with others, you have a sense of integrity and you have a new energy. You have a new energy as to what it is, because otherwise when you're lying to yourself, it just sucks the life out of you.
It's time now for the Driving Eureka book segment with author and inventor, Doug Hall. Well, let's now apply this then. Let's go to the Driving Eureka book segment and talk about how do we take this gap between what people are expecting and what they're getting, and how do we go about with our products and services and begin to bring truth to it?
So in the our innovation engineering courses and in the Driving Eureka book, we talk about communicate, and we I'm going to just quickly simplify it. It's customer, problem, promise, proof. Here's your customer. What's the problem they have? What's our promise to address their problem? And then what's the proof that we can deliver on the promise to solve their problem? Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this week I want to talk about proof. Because proof is where the rubber meets the road. This is, what is it? What is the innovation that we're doing? And how does it make the promise possible? And this is where you've got to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Why are you able to do it? And if you say, we're better, okay, how much better? And why are you better? Well, because we care more. That's crap. Mm-hmm. No, what are you doing? Do your people have more training? Do they have better tools? Do you use better quality raw materials? Do you have an invention that enables you to do something amazing? What is it that makes it possible for you to do something remarkable. And what the data shows, tracking what we called the Darwin 2000, where we tracked actual innovations in the marketplace, is when you have a low amount of proof versus a high amount of proof, when you have high proof, it literally doubles your odds of success in the marketplace. That is still being in business after 3 to 5 years. And so proof really does matter, because the problem and the promise, they get my attention. What proof does is it closes the sale. When I just met with some folks and I went through and I explained time compression finishing and how we do it, that was all nice. And I explained technically why we were able to do it. That was proof. And then I said, but don't take my word for it. Taste them. And they went through and tasted. They said, oh, my God, this is amazing. I've never had whiskey like this. That's it. And it's proof that it actually really does work.
Okay.
Not just wave my hands at it, but real proof.
Okay. So when you say, and I just, because these terms are a little nebulous to me, when you say high proof versus medium proof versus low proof, how would I distinguish what's a high proof type of thing versus the other levels? Or how do you
we have a bunch of different rating things that we use to do that. But a way to think about it is how credible is it? How believable is it? Mm. Does it – yeah, and they didn't really explain how it works. They kind of explain, but I got some questions. That's truth beyond a reasonable doubt. I think they probably can really do it.
Okay. So it's in essence – so going back to some of the things that you've used before, for instance, paired comparison testing, those types of things, those are parts of what you would be comprised in proof.
No, it could be, but I'd rather have that, okay, it tastes better than this as the promise. Mm-hmm. And the reason it tastes better is we use Mongolian sassafras wood, which gives us an elegance. I'm just making something up.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, why are you able to win? I want to know why you can win. So your product's better. That's fine. Why is it better? What are you doing that no one else is doing?
I mean, it almost leads at least my mind to I'm giving away secrets type of thing that I'm.
Well, I mean, if there is a trade secret, then you don't say it. But the fundamental thing is there's usually an analogy that you can use to make that come to life. So, for instance, with our whiskey stuff, the way we explain it to them is we replicate seasons of barrel aging by applying heat and pressure up and down, just like the barrels go through over time. Only we do it very quickly. Okay. I haven't technically explained to you my pressure settings and my ramp up curves and my integration, but I've told you the truth about how we're able to do it.
And that helps then, I guess, from my standpoint, that you've got something that is meaningfully unique. Something that's better than what's in the marketplace, and also knowing your system, that's the aim of the whole thing anyway.
That's right. I'll tell you cannot be meaningfully unique unless you're doing something different. You can't do the same old crap as everybody else and be meaningfully unique. No, that's just a flim-flam game. You have to be doing something different. My question to people always is, what are you doing different than anybody else? What do you do that no one else does? They go, nothing. It's about the same. I said, okay, so you're just a commodity. Well, no. We are made in America. We're care. We customers number one. I said, that's all crap. I mean, that's not the difference. That's not the difference. That's not a difference that matters. Made in America is great if your quality is twice as good as the stuff that comes from China. Well, actually, the China stuff is pretty much about as good as us. Okay, so it doesn't matter. What are you doing that's different? What makes you different? And if you're not, change it. Because when you know you're selling the same old crap as everybody else, but just for a higher price, it sucks the life out of you. You don't get excited to get up in the morning and say, let's do the same crap as everybody else and overcharge people for it. I know. I'm a ranting old man.
No.
That's the problem we got. That's why everything fails. Do we have an epidemic of stupidity when it comes to the world of innovation? I mean, with an 85% failure rate, we should just blow up the system. And instead people go, no, we're doing okay. We just need to get a little bit better. No! 85% failure rate. Imagine if you had an 85% chance your car would start. Would you be happy with it? No. That's where it used to be in the 60s.
Yeah, really.
The fact of the matter is today, we've got to get smarter. And the way you do that is you do stuff that makes a difference. That's why our Eureka Inventing Team. Well, I mean, we're pushing people and people just go, I just read a note. Let me see if I can find it. I read a note from a company that we're working with. I'm not going to give the name. I'm not going to give the name of who the corporation is. But one of the people just completed their blue belt. Okay.
Okay.
And they just completed their blue belt.
So
and
relatively new.
Yeah. They just did this whole thing. They've been with the company for 20 years. They said, I participated in many programs around new product development. They were not dynamic or holistic in their approach. And they said, with each passing years, less and less of our offerings are truly new or offered a significant amount of value. They were cannibalizing on existing established things. And while we've grown, it's hard to say that any of our stuff was truly, really unique. This time, for the first time, is the only approach that addresses the fact that we need to do something that makes a real difference in our customers' lives. And the speed with which new ideas have come to life, direct quote, the speed with which new ideas have come to life and have been refined into workable concepts is nothing short of amazing. I mean, that's somebody that's been sitting there in the treadmill and we're doing a tiny tweak to make a commotion in the marketplace and it just doesn't matter. And now they're saying, wait a minute, we can do something that makes a difference. We can do something that makes a difference.
You know, this follows a lot of what Dr. Deming did teach as far as he would say, there's certain manufacturing that's just gone from the U.S. That we need to be able to manage with our brains. And so far, the philosophy has been of, and I'm sure it's not limited just to American management, but management in general is just looking for the cheapest price. Where can I move my labor to in order to do it more cheaply? And they're totally missing this as far as being able to understand the, well, in this case, the promise of what you bring in innovation with innovation engineering system and being able to actually have a method to not just compete on price, but compete on because you have something better that people will want to buy. I don't want to get that point lost because
you got to decide, right. You got to decide, are you going to be in the pork belly business mm-hmm. and be the low cost producer? Or are you going to sell because you offer something that they can't get anywhere else? And one's a lot more profitable than the other, like three times more profitable. And that's a choice. And there's a place for people that sell commodities. That's the market for that. But there's also a market, and the people that make money are the ones that add value. Right. And so that's a strategic choice. Hmm. If you've made a strategic choice to be cheap, then don't whine about the fact that you have tight margins. That you made that. That's a choice. The market doesn't create commodities. Leadership decides to be commodities. It's a leadership decision, not a market decision.
Yeah. And there's one other thing you had in here that kind of caught my eye too in your newsletter, which was you say, sadly, analysis finds that only 20% of concepts offer product or service proof. That leaves 80% that don't. Is it a coincidence that just over 80% of all new products and services fail?
Yeah. And so to be clear, it's not as that it's that they didn't put the words in. The reason they didn't put the words in is because there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's a fake. It's not a real innovation. It's just marketing mumbo jumbo. It's just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, to use the analogy. That's it. And when you have something that's really remarkable, you tell people about it. And when you don't, what we find is, you pretty much don't have anything.
Okay, very good. Well, let's move to the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. This is the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy podcast, where we will take you behind the scenes so you can see what it takes to build a whiskey distillery business. The Eureka Ranch team, led by Doug Hall, are creating a craft whiskey company with patented technology like has never been done before. The importance of honesty.
Okay. So when it comes to crafting whiskey, there are many methods. You can grow the grain, distill, mature with wood, blend and bottle. Okay, so it's grain to glass. Or you can buy commercial grains, mature with wood, blend and bottle. Okay? Yep. Or you can buy raw spirit, mature with wood, blend and bottle. All three can do it, but there's a different cost and time requirement. And our choice is the third, because the raw spirit is only, you know, 5% of what matters. 70% is the wood, 25% is what grains you pick to use in your whiskey. And so the value add is not in the distilling. The value add is in the aging, because that's where all the flavor comes from. Now, I know people don't like that, but that's just our choice. You can do whatever you want. What matters, the thing that is most important, is what does your whiskey taste like? And however you do it is fine. But the other thing is then being honest and straightforward in your communications. Because when you're transparent, you build trust. So we're very clear on our labels that we use time compression to finish our products. And that's what we do. And we explain how it works. That's it. That's what we do. And we don't hide it. It's on the front label. It's on the back label. We're very honest about it. And in fact, we're proud that we do that. We're proud of it. Because so much of the flavor and color of a whiskey comes from the wood, we're focusing on the place that matters to you, our customers, to give you the best taste experience and to give you a unique taste experience. In fact, time compression is how we do it. That is the proof to do it. Now, you're dealing with a category that classically has no proof. It's legend and lore instead of real proof. In other words, if you follow the bourbon rules exactly, your bourbon, because the rules are so tight, is going to be like every other person's bourbon. I mean, it's going to have a little bit of variation on is it rye or wheat, the second ingredient. But and the temperatures of where you are when you're doing it. But fundamentally, it's all going to be basically about the same. And so congratulations, you've just gone through a process that allows you to make a product that's just about the same as the big guys, but that costs you a lot more money than it costs the giants to make whiskey. Hmm. Where in our case, if I use 200-year wood, if I mix Japanese wood with European oak, if I start to use maple, I start to use cherry, if I change the pressure cycles to replicate the seasons of different parts of the world, I can make totally unique tastes. And I can craft things where the taste is totally different. So the key here is to be honest. And when we do something different, like what we're doing with time compression, don't hide it. Celebrate it. You say, yeah, but people won't like that because you're different. I go, well, the only reason they should like me is because I'm different. You know, I mean, it's like a circular logic. People are like, well, I don't want to tell people we're doing it. Oh, that's right. So here, try my whiskey. It's the same old crap as everybody else. Well, that's not going to sell much. Hmm. You know, and so we like to celebrate it. And so just tell people what you're doing. Tell them what it is.
So, Doug, if you take the how you break things out, you know, in, again, I've used the term yellow card, but as you fill out your idea and you're going through and you have your customer, your problem, your promise, and your proof, what would you have for each of those for the brain brew? How would you define the customer and going all the way down through problem, promise, and proof?
Well, it depends. I mean, 18% drink whiskey. So if it was one of my products that was made for people that are whiskey drinkers, it'd be one thing. If it was scotch drinkers, it'd be another thing. So if it was non-drinkers, it would be a different one. Okay. So let's take the 82%.
Okay.
Okay, which would be our Keelboat product. 82% of the population don't drink whiskey in the last year in America. That's the facts. That's the data. Big surveys show this. And so the problem is that you like spirits, but you don't like whiskey because it can have a harsh and it has a bite to it. What we've got is with our Keelboat product, we've got an easy drinking product that tastes great over that's been made to be drank over the rocks, and it makes cocktails that won't have any speed bump in them. So when you taste it, you taste this smooth thing. And as you may or may not know, for the five top cocktails in the world are whiskey cocktails because they have more flavor than you get with a vodka. And the reason we're able to do this is because we use a four-grain product and we've optimized it so to smooth it. And our time compression approach smooths it off. So to give you the taste of a older whiskey, but for the price at a reasonable price. And that's what we've got. And so you're going to get a product that won't have a speed bump in your cocktail. You know, you taste it and you go, oh, there's the bourbon. It was fine except for when I tasted the bourbon. In our case, it fuses together to become one.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is as you built these products, you had a specific customer problem promise proof in mind for your keelboat versus your tall stacks versus
actually we weren't that smart.
Oh,
we made the products, okay. And then we ran quantitative testing and we looked at the demographics and psychographics because we can do the data like really quick and cheap. We looked at the data, and then from the data we figured out who they appealed to, and then we optimized it for that group of people.
Ah.
So ours is not a matter of pontificating and then telling them what they do. Our whiskeys are of the people and by the people. I've been doing this business so long that I've learned that especially when I do things that are new and different, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I believe in taking it out and getting quantitative data, looking at the people that are doing it, and then finding out basically kind of what neighborhood of people like this. And sometimes there's none or there's not a big enough thing, so we kill it. But I find a group that people like, and then I optimize it for that group of people. Hmm. So each of our products is different. If you like smoky food and cigars, you're going to like tall stacks. If you're somebody that's a big whiskey forward, you like the big whiskey cocktails, the Manhattans and that kind of stuff, then you're going to like our Deckhand product. If you're more of a connoisseur of whiskey and you like to drink it over ice or neat, then our paddle wheel with 200-year wood is absolutely going to be your product. That's the one you're going to do. And if you're new to whiskey and you've never had it before, then you're going to like our keelboat product because it's a super easy drinking, no stress, no bite, no burn product. And so our four core products each appeal to a very different customer segment.
So would it be fair, just from some of our previous conversations, that the keelboat then, because you're going after the 82%, is more likely to, and you know, you mentioned it being on the rocks, but we also talked about expanding the market. And you're talking about the 82% that really don't drink whiskey, that they're more functionally operating towards a cocktail.
Yeah, it's definitely over half of whiskey in America is drinking cocktails or mixed. So, yes, it's celebrating it. And there's many whiskey companies who, you know, they really don't they token cocktails. They don't celebrate them. In this case here, we optimize the product to make spectacular cocktails. And I'll go head to head with anybody in a cocktail with it amongst a mass audience. Hmm. Now, if it's a hardcore whiskey person, I'm going to use one of my other whiskeys for it, the smoked or the Deckhand, because they're a bigger whiskey taste. But amongst the masses, that's what it's made for.
Okay.
There's all a purpose. Right. There's a real purpose. See, to me, whenever you have a line of products, you got to be able to tell me why that product is in the line. And if you can't justify why it's in the line, then don't do it for the sake of doing it. You're just creating a noise.
Okay. So the interesting part I learned here is you kind of started with the whiskey, and then and maybe this goes back to the development piece when you were talking about developing, but you know, whether it's products, services, the same thing with whiskey. That you're kind of in the development process, you continually are learning and you know, modifying the product associated with people steering you in different directions in association with what happens in that development process.
Yeah, you can start from an idea, mm-hmm. or you can start from a product. You can even start from a package. When I start from an idea, sometimes it's just not possible to make the product. Hmm. So my bias and not to say that you can't. My bias is figure out a cool product that's meaningfully unique and then figure out how to market it. And usually, if you can find a meaningfully unique product, you can find a way to sell it. Not always. There's times you make a meaningfully unique product, but there's no way to sell it. But the number of times that you fail because you have an idea, but you can't physically do it, you can't make the whiskey make that, you can't create that, that's much greater. And so I like to start from meaningfully unique products and build them out. It's much faster process for doing it in my mind. But then again, I can make whiskey, you know, very quickly. I can do 72 cycles in 7 days. And so I have a system to do it. If your product development process is a very slow one, then that's not the case. You know, so again, it's just different strokes for different folks, depending upon where you are.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move to the craft cocktail recipe. It says Great Scott Rusty Nail. Now, I've had the Rusty Nail before. I like the Rusty Nail. So,
yeah. Okay. So this is the Rusty Nail. That's the classic from Scotland, the Rat Pack in the 1960s, Drambuie liqueur from the Isle of Skye. Bonnie Prince Charlie, the legend, made it. It's a whiskey liqueur. And classically, you would put that together with a couple of ounces of whiskey of whatever type you want and about a half ounce of Drambuie, and you'd build it over ice and stir it. Okay? Classic. Mm-hmm. In our case, Great Scott is named in honor of Scott McCauley, a dear, dear friend who's led the College of Piping and Celtic Performing Arts of Canada and who sadly passed away. He was not the founder, but he was the spiritual founder of the College of Piping, which I'm very involved in, and just a dear friend. And so I named this one after him, where what we do is we use our Tall Stacks bourbon, which is a smoked product, a three-wood smoked product, hickory, cherry, and apple. And it just creates this wonderful smoke cloud. In fact, as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking tonight, that's what I got to have tonight. I think that's my cocktail tonight, I think. And it's just because you get the sweet of the Drambuie and you get the smoke. And so you get this sweet smoke combination, which is just boom. I mean, it just takes your mind to a different place. Because it's taken in another world. So
sounds strong.
It is a whiskey forward. It is not for a newbie. Okay. Cause it is, I mean, there is some sweetness to it. So it tones it down. The Drambuie is pretty sweet. So, but it is not for a newbie.
Okay. You know, there's a couple of things you've talked about. You've talked about different riffs and we've talked about, you know, starting with an original recipe and then kind of going from there. You know, I threw out on some of these social media sites on Facebook, I just said, you know, hey, what kind of mixed drinks do you have or cocktails do you have with your whiskey? And it's pretty much everybody kind of has the same thing. One person mentioned a Sazerac, but most of the other people said an old fashioned or a Manhattan. Those seem to be the ones that are on their people's minds anyway, that they find to be their favorites. Are there, I mean, I also then, because of some of the things that we've talked about during our episodes of different drinks, so I can't remember, I'm probably going to mismatch these, but for instance, I remember there was some relationship, I think, between the Manhattan and the Boulevard. So I said, you know, I asked people, I said, you know, have you tried the Boulevard? You know, so different people, I got different people out there at least trying different things, yeah. You know, from that standpoint.
Well, we are the next explosion in alcoholic beverages, I believe, there's going to be two. One is going to be low to no alcohol. Is definitely coming, and we're working in that space, and it's going to be huge. But it's all and it's going to be cocktails, but not cocktails out of a jug of high fructose corn syrup sweetened citrus junk. But the craft world is fresh juices. I was amazed. I was in New York recently for a thing with Innovation Engineering and went to see a show. And I went into a Anthony Bourdain dive. bless, you know, he's passed away. But but this was like, I tried to find a fancy cocktail bar near Times Square, and I couldn't find anything that was worthwhile. So I went into basically a Cuban dive. I mean, it was not, shall we say, it was more of a working man's place, not a high society place.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered the Hemingway, which we've talked about.
Yep.
Because it was Cuban and they had Hemingway on it. And I thought, and I figured I was going to get myself, you know, a sugar sweet thing to done. And damned if the guy didn't literally right in front of me, fresh squeeze the juices, brings me the cocktail. And I said, man, that is amazing. I can't believe it. He says, well, you know, I have a lot of pride in what I do. And this is the bartender. And I thought, damn. That's awesome. You know, he's not in a hotty-totty place. The drinks are not stupid prices, but he is a person and supported clearly by the owner that they're going to do honest work and do it. And the more we get that, the more the everyday hotel bar, the restaurants, the chains make a commitment to doing real stuff, we're going to see an explosion in cocktails. Our cocktail experience is just ridiculous. I just think it's just going to be the next wave. That's we're opening up over in London, and everybody over there is talking. It's going to be cocktails, cocktails, and cocktails. So hopefully we'll open this up. And while I love the Manhattan and I love old fashioned and they're great cocktails, there's just so much more you can do. So much more you can do.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. And maybe that's not the market here, but how can you move people off of those into things like the Boulevard or even new drinks that are out there? Have you kind of written off the people that are closer to our age? And you're talking about the people that are the millennials that are coming up. Is that kind of the focus?
No, actually, I think both.
The
older people are looking for something new. They're looking for something different.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a percentage of them. And there are, you know... there are drinks out there that you can turn around and do. Some of them have been trashed because of, you know, the quality that was done. You know, in many cases, what's happened to the whiskey sour is that bad sour mix, as opposed to making Phillips one, where we use lime, lemon, and orange juice, as well as the zest from the fruit as we're making it. And, you know, we start to make it that way. With a 1-to-1 simple syrup, not a 2-to-1, in other words, one part sugar, one part water, and then using 3/4 of a cup of juice, you're not getting that sticky sweet. The zest gives you freshness. You taste that, and it's an amazing drink. Mm. And so in some cases, you got to do that. But in other cases, you know, so you like an old fashioned, that's cool. Well, I give you a Gold Rush, and instead of using, you know, a sugar cube, I'm using honey water. Instead of using orange, I'm using lemon juice. So it's a cousin to the old fashioned, but the honey gives it some depth. The lemon juice gives it a brightness to it. And it's not scary to you. It's a variation on it. And then once you learn that, I show you, okay, well, you can do a riff. Do you want to turn around and use pineapple juice instead? And we call that a risky whiskey. So now I've used honey water and pineapple. And suddenly we got people becoming cocktail chefs who can make their own stuff as opposed to focused on the cookbook.
That's interesting. I'd be curious as you get deeper into this, especially with some of these new products that you have as you go into bars, because you've talked quite a bit about, you know, sometimes you just go in a bar and you see the stuff and the mixes and those types of things. And then there's the guy like you just talked about, you know, from the Cuba restaurant, you know, that was, you know, really into a craft cocktail, you know, really wanted to make something special. I'm curious if the Doug part of you is going to be, I'm only going to sell if they've got to these bars, if they have the right, you know, bartender or the right attitude or something. Is that entered your mind? I don't know.
Yes, it has.
Okay.
Yes, it has. We haven't figured that out yet. but we'll encourage them with positiveness, with apps that point people to it. So you ready for this?
Okay.
This is the first time we've announced this.
All right.
This is a secret, so don't tell anybody, okay?
It's being recorded, Doug.
This is the stuff that gets me in trouble.
Okay.
So recently we had a whole bunch of people taste a stupid number of cocktails and answer a ridiculous number of questions on what kind of foods and beverages they liked.
Okay.
Do you like smoked food, hot and spicy food, sweet versus sour, salty versus all kinds of questions.
Okay.
And then the ranch has some like ridiculous super brains for computer programming and data analysis, which is why innovation engineering has all these artificial intelligence apps that makes you smarter than you are, which I always need, because it helps me. Well, Greg has built, and we've got a rough prototype, and he's also got a mischievous sense of humor. Where up comes a question, and there's apps where you swipe right and you swipe left.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you swipe right and you swipe left, whether you like that thing or not. Mm. And after you do the swiping, the app then brings up a customized cocktail just for you.
Oh, really?
That's so cool. It takes you down through to find the cocktail that you would most like. I'll send you a link to the, actually I can't give you the demo to it cause he's got it on the thing, but, and it doesn't just make a cocktail, it makes your cocktail.
Oh, that's cool.
So it will adjust the amount of alcohol. It will adjust.
Oh, wow.
Do you have fizz to the thing? It adjusts which whiskey you should use. And so it's literally creating your own cocktail recipe. And so we think this is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so what will happen is people will be able to do the app and it will tell them which bars in the city have cocktails that match their taste and what the name of the cocktail is.
And well, you're only going to be able to do that for Cincinnati, right?
And then we'll do it in every other city with our partners.
Okay. I got you. Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. No, that'll be something.
That's stupidly cool.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's taking your research and actually making it applicable to at the where the rubber meets the road place. So that's great. No, I can't wait. So when will we see this thing, more in the public?
I have no idea. And bizarrely, this is my answer is when it's right.
Okay.
when it works.
Okay.
And I don't, I'm in this business for the long term. So unlike stupid people who just say, well, you have to ship it May 1st, whether it's ready or not, ship it. And then you ship something crappy. When we feel good enough about it and the testing shows, right now some of the strains are really, really good at picking people, the cocktail. Some of them are not because it's like this whole algorithm they go through. Mm-hmm. And so we have to do some more optimization on it to get there. But when we've got it so that it's working more times than not and giving added value to people, then we'll ship it. And so when we ship it, it works. And we don't ship crap. So we don't ship bad products. We don't ship bad software. It has to work. Okay. So
cool. All right. Well, bringing honesty to the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy or the importance of it. Any final comments on it?
Yeah. So this – think of Hazel Hall, folks. Don't tell me it's mostly true. Don't tell me it's kind of true. Tell me the truth, the whole truth. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with those you work with. Be honest with your customers. And when you do that, you're going to have boundless energy. But as Ben Franklin said, it's easier to suppress the first desire than all those that follow it. The minute you start to shade it a little bit, kind of, sort of, it's okay. Then the next thing you know, you're just selling crap. And nobody needs crap. Let's do great things.
That's a good way to end it. Because we appreciate you as a listener, we are offering for a limited time four things. A 1 hour abridged audio of the Driving Eureka book. A subscription to the Driving Eureka newsletter, which contains weekly advice from Doug Hall on how to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And the newsletter has other offers that are not made public. The Driving Eureka prescription for success: you answer questions and we'll help you assess your ability to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And you get advice on how to grow your ability to innovate. And the last item, access to a Doug Hall interview with a radio legend. To get these offers, go to www.doughall.com/podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Driving Eureka podcast on iTunes.